It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
One, have children. Because starting a family is a fulfilled life, and having children is the preservation of America. Two, Democrats take cover and prepare for a midterm whooping. Three, why does everything look the same, sound the same? Why is everything the same? I introduce you to refinement culture. It's the Will Cain Podcast on Fox News Podcast. What's up? And welcome to Monday. As always, I hope you will download, rate, and review this podcast wherever you get your audio entertainment. Apple, Spotify, or at Fox News Podcast. You can also watch the Will Cain Podcast on Rumble or on YouTube. It's a sad day. It's a bad day. It was a sad weekend. It's a bad weekend. You know, last week here together on the Will Cain Podcast, we came together on Monday and I said, let us take our wins. Let's celebrate a weekend of victory. In the philosophy of Dallas Cowboys owner Jerry Jones, if you don't enjoy the wins, what's the point in suffering through the losses? Jerry Jones pointing out, party, have a good time, let loose when it's all going your way. Because it's going to hurt so bad when it doesn't go your way. And that's life. It doesn't go your way. One weekend after my weekend of victories, it's a weekend of losses. It was a rough weekend within the Cain family household on the soccer pitch. A new lesson in parenting. It was a rough weekend on the football field with my Texas Longhorns once again choking up yet another fourth quarter lead. It was a weekend of losses. I remember in the 1990s, Troy Aikman said this, and I've also heard it said in the words of legendary coach Bill Parcells. When asked, what drives you to succeed? Is it this perceived lust for competition, or rather lust for victory, that compels the competition? And both Parcells and Aikman said, no, I've never enjoyed a win as much as I've suffered through and hated a loss. Most of my competition and most of my effort is in pursuit of the avoidance of failure. Now, don't take that to mean some type of risk intolerance. You don't avoid failure by quitting. You don't avoid failure by not competing. But you work hard. You compete to avoid the loss, not so much to enjoy the win. That's a philosophy that honestly, I really, really feel that I really, really identify. Look, I've had a few entrepreneurial ventures in my life. I've started a few businesses. And let me just tell you, the ones that have succeeded and the spoils, much, much less, the spoils of those victories weigh nothing compared to my failures, compared to my losses. I remember how that feels. I don't ever want to fail. I don't want to have that feeling, but it does drive me forward. It does make me compete. I don't know what is the right motivation. I don't know what is the better life to live. One who has a lust for victory, or one who will do anything to avoid a defeat. All I know is when it comes to me, I'm Aikman. I'm Parcells. I'm the latter. And so this weekend was a sad day, a bad day. That's the words of my friend, Barstool sports star Jersey Jerry, who was on the Will Cain Podcast last Friday. Go back and check it out if you missed that episode with Jersey Jerry. I ordered a shirt, by the way, with his famous slogan. It's a sad day. It's a bad day. I wore it on the airplane traveling to New York. And let me just tell you, if people think you're having a sad day or a bad day, they're concerned. I guess that says something about human nature, about America. People didn't want to see my t-shirt. They wanted me to be happy, and they wanted me to change my clothes. But not today. Not this weekend. I know you don't want to hear a downer, a depressor, and I promise you, I'm not. I won't be. In fact, I think we have a fascinating episode, a deep dive on America's changing culture today here on the Will Came Podcast. But if you'll forgive me just a few moments of indulgence, I'm going to savor this weekend of losses, this sad day, this bad day, this failure, because it's going to drive me forward. It's going to drive me to succeed. Story number one. Have children. It's a fulfilled life, and demographics are destiny. You might just be preserving the United States of America. Last week here on the Will Came Podcast, we talked about the cost, the power of illegal immigration, the power to change American culture. 2 million encounters in the last fiscal year at America's southern border with immigrants, illegal immigrants, coming from Venezuela, from Haiti, from Central America, from Mexico. That level of illegal immigration is, first of all, unsustainable in a world and a country of finite resources. But that level of illegal immigration is almost certain to change the fabric and foundation of America. It is almost certain to change the culture of America. Now, we've heard it said, it's admitted across the political aisle. It's become a political cliche. Demographics is destiny. On the left, people have talked about the declining power of the Republican Party, which they would define, now inaccurately for what it's worth, which they would define as a party of rich old white men. It's no longer. The world has changed. Republicans are increasingly winning the Latino vote. Republicans are increasingly winning the blue collar middle class vote. No, but they still see it as demographics are destiny, and that's good for Democrats. So if demographics are destiny, and I think we do agree, if not at the ballot box in American culture, then what is happening? Who are we? And what, in turn, will we become? What's the past, what's the present, and what's the future of American culture? Let's first of all set the table. Let's have everyone on the same page that massive amounts of migration, much less illegal immigration, has the ability to radically change the personality, the character, the fabric of a nation. I want to share with you these statistics here. This comes to us from the Gatestone Institute. The Gatestone Institute is an institution that has been accompanied with some controversy from time to time, and not all of their information is always accurate, but it's not all false either. And these are some fascinating statistics right here. Listen to how demographics are destiny in Europe. According to the Gatestone Institute, fewer babies will be born in all of Europe than in Nigeria alone by 2050. More than half the increase of the global population projected by 2050 will be concentrated in just 8 countries. Most of those are in Africa, according to The Economist. Congo, Egypt, Ethiopia, India, Nigeria, Pakistan, Philippines, and Tanzania. Nigeria will have more inhabitants than Europe and the United States. That is according to The Economist. I want to repeat that because I read it quickly and it has such weight. More than half the increase of the global population projected by 2050, the entire world's population, half concentrated in 8 countries, most of those in Africa. This according to The Economist. Congo, Egypt, Ethiopia, India, Nigeria, Pakistan, Philippines, and Tanzania. Nigeria will have more inhabitants than Europe and the United States. Now take that global explosion in population and set it, though, side by side with the declining birth rates in Europe. European, and for that matter, Far East Japanese birth rates have been falling for several decades. below replacement level, replacement level being 2.1 children per couple. For example, this is, according to this study, a crisis that is not a projection, but is happening right now. Listen, by 2050, 60% of Italians will have no brothers, sisters, cousins, uncles, or aunts. The Italian family, with the father who pours the wine and the mother who serves pasta to the table of grandparents, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren, will be gone, as extinct as dinosaurs. So, what you see in Europe and Japan is declining birth rates from the native population, the one that maintains the fabric of the culture over, if not centuries, millennia. Declining birth rate within that population, exploding birth rates across the world, and then the disappearance of national borders, and then the influx of illegal immigration, not exclusively the phenomenon of the United States of America. Multiculturalism and the illegal immigration and refugees and migration, long now, decades, part of the story of Europe. My question to you is, what do you think happens? You change the fabric of that culture. Now, it doesn't by definition mean you change a culture for the worse. The story of the United States of America is the story of a melting pot. With open arms, we accept the tired and the poor. We accept immigrants. We're a nation founded upon immigrants. And with that, each immigration class has brought with them their cultures and their customs. However, it is not true that the United States of America is a salad bowl. The United States of America is not one where each ingredient, each part of the recipe is intended to stay separate, distinct, divided. It's not a salad. Tomatoes over here, onions over there, avocado, lettuce. It is, by intention, a melting pot where those cultures come together, mix together. And by virtue of anything, when something is reduced under heat and through assimilation, the best of everything comes together. But in order for that to be true, there has to be a consistency. You have to have a base. In anything you cook, there is a base. Chicken stock, whatever it may be. There's a base to the recipe. And in that, you are adding the ingredients. The base is the acknowledgement that there is a culture of the United States of America. And if there is a culture, we have to acknowledge the victories of that culture, the fruits that it has produced. As we talked about in last week's episode of the Will Came podcast, just for one, putting a man on the moon. And obviously, there's so much more, producing the vast majority of the world's wealth, attracting people. And I emphasize, I highlight, I italicize the word attracting people from across the world. They didn't come here because they wanted to get front row seats at an AMC theater. They came here for a better life, a life that the American culture has produced. That should be something that we say with our hearts beaming, smiles on our faces, proud and positive of the United States of America. Not denial and hatred and guilt of who we are, what we've done, or our failings, but the antithesis of Bill Parcells and Troy Aikman, and Will Cain for that matter, defined by our successes, pushed forward by what we've achieved, not by our failures. And obviously so much of American society and culture today is a project of destruction, a project of tearing down America, defining us by our failures, reminding us of our original sin, and using it to malign and ultimately destroy the American culture. But for the rational, for the optimistic, for the clear-eyed, we see the fruits, we see the success of the United States of America. And therefore, when you add new ingredients to that base, you do it with intention, with the legal immigration process, asking who can, while being open to refugees and those in need, asking who can make this melting pot tastier, make the United States of America better. In future episodes this week of the Will Kane podcast, we'll dive exactly into defining American culture. I won't leave it abstract. I won't leave it simply that feeling that you have at the end of the national anthem. I won't leave it something that if you disagree, you cannot attack, and if you love, you cannot support. We will define that culture of the United States of America. But for today's purposes, what we're establishing is the existence of a culture in America, and a culture worthy of being preserved. And the acknowledgement now, in looking through Europe and looking at our crisis on the southern border, that indeed, demographics are destiny. And you can change with unfettered migration, with increasingly seeing the country as a salad bowl and not a melting pot, with the idea that the base is foul, the base of our recipe, the American culture is rotten, that you can change who we are, what we are. You can acknowledge what you mean when you say demographics are destiny. With that, I want to share with you now the importance of having children. I want to share with you one of the saddest things that I've ever read. And I mean that, one of the saddest things I've ever read. You remember David Hogg? David Hogg is a survivor of the mass shooting at Parkland High School in Florida. David Hogg has gone on to use that as a trampoline to fame and political activism. He is an especially foul political activist. What I mean by that is someone who traffics largely in lies and slander, ad hominem attacks, somebody who has not much valuable, despite his personal experience, to contribute to our national debate. Like, he has a ton of company in that respect, right? Keith Olbermann, Rex Chapman, whatever it may be. Like those other two, David Hogg is largely a social media activist and extremist. But he speaks for many. And he might be speaking for a generation when he tweets the following: I'm never planning on having kids. I would much rather own a Porsche and have a Portuguese water dog and a golden doodle. Long term, it's cheaper, better for the environment, and will never tell you that it hates you or ask you to pay for college. That's quite possibly the most unfulfilled and sad statement ever written. I would rather own a Porsche and have a Portuguese water dog and a golden doodle. It's cheaper and better for the environment. This was part of a thread where Hogg said the following: kids are the new boats. Pets are the new kids. Plants are the new pets. Let me explain, he says. Like, yes, kids are nice, but most people can't afford them, so it's nice to have friends with one, but not have one yourself. Pets are the affordable version of kids today for millennials and Gen Z, and plants are now the more affordable pets. Like, the number of people I know who literally throw big actual birthday parties for their dogs that they have friends invited, and everything is awesome, but also very telling of our changing views of having children and our economic condition. And that's why he sees it's better to own a Porsche or a golden doodle. Hogg goes on, I would love to help watch my friends' kids in the future, though, and be that fun uncle that helps them learn how to skateboard and surf and stuff. Also, big reason I will never have kids in the U.S., I refuse to raise kids in a country that values effing guns over children's lives. All right. First, let's start with the issue that Hogg is most associated, and that is mass school shootings. I'm going to address many of the things that Hogg said here because I think it's important. It's important to the larger conversation we're having about American culture and the fact that demographics are destiny. We'll start with Hogg. We'll end with AOC. This mindset that a fulfilled life is owning a Porsche and a golden doodle is actually, in my estimation, the largest contributor to school mass shootings, much more so than the AR-15. Hogg has used his personal experience to become an advocate when it comes to gun control. He speaks at that from the experience of a survivor of a mass shooting. Guns have been part of American culture for decades. I recognize that America has a unique problem within the context of the world when it comes to school mass shootings. But the unique problem of school mass shootings that's manifested in the past two decades doesn't find an outlier in gun ownership. Gun ownership has always been part of the United States of America. Gun culture, a much less regulated gun culture in America since the 1800s. But school shootings are a new phenomenon. No, guns are not the causation, even much less the correlation in the rise in mass school shootings. What I would offer to you is it's a generation of young men devoid of purpose, no fulfillment, selfish desires, hollow, shallow, selfish desires, even those left unfulfilled. Then escapism into the world of entertainment and video games. I do believe, however controversial it may be, that if that escapism takes a particular form and constantly living in the world of first-person shooter games, you're now seeking your fulfillment in something not just empty but grotesque. And then these unfulfilled, empty, listless young men look for the most evil thing they can do to deny their own existence and leave some mark, no matter how horrid. My belief is that the cause of mass shootings in America is a lost generation of young men. And what Hogg is laying out for you is the recipe for a further, not just generation, but society of shallow, unfulfilled, lost desire. A young man brought up to believe he'd rather own a Porsche than have a child may not be directly a young man on his way to shooting up a school, but has adopted a philosophy that has led to young men going and shooting up a school. This mindset, by the way, has also been echoed by people with actual power. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, TikTok and Instagram star, went on to her Instagram stories and said that having children was essentially the province of the wealthy, that capitalism is the reason that our birth rates in the United States of America have declined. I laid out for you Europe's birth rates. Now, let's bring it back home to America. America is falling below the replacement level of having children. Now, AOC tells you that's because of capitalism. It's all too expensive to have a kid. Of course, that's historically illiterate. Poor people have been having babies since the beginning of time. In fact, really, it's why we're here, because a bunch of poor people had babies. It's why I'm here. It's why you're here. And if you think, well, my parents were pretty well off, what about their parents and their parents and their parents? Trust me, what we think of poverty, they thought of wealth. Poor people have babies. They're doing it today. Capitalism hasn't left people behind. I will share a criticism of capitalism. It has created David Hoggs, who'd rather own a Porsche than have a child. It's capitalism untethered from morality, moral capitalism, an understanding of purpose on this earth has led people to elevating material wealth. No doubt about it. And oh, I got to do this and I got to accomplish that and I got to own this and I got to wear Y and buy X and sell Z before I can have a kid. We're a generation, we're a society heading down the path of David Hogg. Maybe that's in some part the part of capitalism, the fault of capitalism, or maybe it's in some part the fault of us and not grounding our capitalism in a deeper, more fulfilled, purpose-driven, moral existence. AOC and David Hogg represent a personally unfulfilled life. This is a recipe, a sad, sad recipe for a sad, sad life. And then on the macro scale, it's a recipe for the decline in the American experiment, for the decline in American culture. While we're on the subject of having children, it's worth noting one more politician. Georgia failed gubernatorial candidate Stacey Abrams said last week that the ultrasound machine, the one that detects a fetal heartbeat, was a conspiracy made by men to control women's bodies. The ultrasound machine's a conspiracy. You don't really have a fetal heartbeat. Not at 6 weeks old, said Stacey Abrams. It's all a farce. The machine's making the sound. It's like Plato's shadows on the wall. It's not reality. There's a reality somewhere else, but you're just looking at the shadows. That heartbeat, in fact, it's a computer machine-created sound to make you believe in life so that a man can control your decision, woman. Stacey Abrams, of course, conspiracy theorist, election denier, ultrasound machine truthist. Stacey Abrams got the backing as you knew she would, of media. Set aside the fact that Planned Parenthood on their website just a few weeks ago had on their website that there's a heartbeat at 5-6 weeks of gestation. They quickly took that off because the new political talking point had been uttered from on high, Stacey Abrams. Then they edited it to reflect Stacey Abrams' statement. And then the scribes and science and journalists got to work. I want to share with you this column from Dr. Esther Chu, published, of course, at MSNBC. Here, Chu writes in the headline, "The fetal heartbeat isn't real, at least not in the way you think." She goes on, "This kind of soft on facts, strong on the emotional overlay, milieu, nurtures policies that are both dangerous and ludicrous. At 6 weeks of pregnancy, there is no heart. There is no sound. A heartbeat is insufficient to produce a human, not least when it only reflects periodic electrical activity produced by a clump of precursor cells." Let's just highlight, italicize, and underline that. It reflects periodic electrical activity produced by a clump of precursor cells. Have you ever read something more inhumane? Reducing the magic of life to a series of words that emit this sound. That's white noise language, and that's produced by a human mouth, not a conspiratorial ultrasound machine. Chu goes on, "With less than half an inch mass, there is not yet any structure recognizable as a heart, no pumping of blood, no circulatory system within which it could be pumped, and no developed end organs to pump it to." She goes on to say, this is my favorite part, listen to this, that the heartbeat at 6 weeks is, quote, "a social construct that has more to do with the anticipation of future outcomes and little to do with what is actually present." It's a social construct, like gender. And everything else in America. It's just a social construct. I'm a social construct. You're a social construct. You know what's easy to do to a social construct? Destroy it. Erase it. March against the wall, social construct. Not a problem. You're not a human. Just like the way they're treating this baby. It's a social construct, that heartbeat. It's the most, not inhumane, but dehumanizing language you could possibly publish. It's the anticipation of future outcomes, not what's actually present. Bill Burr in his comedy special says, "I can understand both sides of the debate, but look, if you put cookie dough into an oven, it will become a cookie. It's going to become a cookie. If you hadn't yanked it out and tossed the cookies all around the kitchen, it would have become a cookie. But for you, this future outcome is a baby. But for you and your forceps." Stacey Abrams, AOC, and David Hogg. Destroying lives. And because demographics is destiny, destroying. Yes. Destroying American culture. If you reduce the number of children we have here, and we are not unlike Europe, where our replacement rate, we as a society are not having children, but we are, and this is what AOC says in her TikTok or Instagram story, because birth rates are declining, we need illegal immigration. She's openly telling you what this is about, what happens. So what happens? What happens to American culture? I told you last week on the Will Cain podcast, there's a new book coming out that suggests migration, immigration, reflects that generations of immigrants retain the culture from which they came and don't assimilate and adopt the culture from where they go. To where they move. So what? So what happens? What happens to American culture? And what replaces or what becomes American culture? We'll dive into that later this week here on the Will Cain Podcast as we define where we have been, where we are. And I'll challenge any of you to define where we're going in America.
We'll be right back with more of the Will Cain Podcast.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, the Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts.
Story number two. Democrats seem to be going towards defeat and failure. We are some 45 days out from the midterm elections of 2022, and polling is all over the place. But if you want an insight, a little bit of insight into where exactly this midterm election is going to come down, all you have to do is look at the behavior and the statements of Democratic politicians. I'll give you three. Jen Psaki this week was on Meet the Press. The former White House press secretary said that economy and crime define the election, and most importantly, if it's a referendum on the president of the United States, if the election is about Joe Biden, says his former press secretary, Democrats will lose. According to Beto O'Rourke, failed presidential, senatorial, and soon to be failed gubernatorial candidate from Texas, Democrats have failed when it comes to immigration. He understands how big a deal this is because he is at least in Texas and understands the conversation you and I just had about American culture and illegal immigration is not a white-based, not a race-based conversation or voting issue. Latinos gravitating to Republicans because Latinos care about illegal immigration. Beto O'Rourke says that Joe Biden's never even made his way down to see the problem. He's telling you, Democrats are in trouble. But the most fascinating indictment or Nostradamus-esque look into the crystal ball comes to you courtesy of California Governor Gavin Newsom. Newsom and Beto were in Texas at a event festival speaking engagement put on by the left-leaning Texas Tribune. And Newsom said that Democrats are losing the narrative battle. He said, we've gotten our butts kicked on CRT. We've got it kicked on immigration. We're getting our butts kicked on trans issues. And soon, he says this, soon, they're going to move to ESG. That's environmental, social, and governance. And we've talked about it a little bit, and we have to talk about it more. He's right. We should move to ESG, which is woke policy in the corporate boardroom. Woke policy in capitalism. It's why, for example, the endowment of the University of Texas is now number one and Harvard's endowment has fallen to number two. Why? Well, Harvard, according to ESG policies, had to divest themselves of oil and gas stocks. Evil. Bad. Bad, bad. Texas. Good. Goes to number one. ESG everywhere, which means you're putting aside merit, capitalism, consumer demands, supply and demand. You're now actually just an agent and an arm of an agenda. Oh, I'm sure wrapped up in the nice holiday paper of doing the right thing. Doing the right thing is what? Being a good citizen as defined by who? Oh, all your same friends who share your same points of view. Hey, real quick on Newsom. You know what's fascinating about Newsom speaking at an event in Texas? Did you know that there's a travel ban in California? No state funds can be used to support travel to states on their naughty list, states that have policies they consider to be discriminatory. When California first put this into effect, there were something like four states. It's metastasized into 22 states. California says, we're not going to be spending any money. No official state funds being spent in those states. Those states, by the way, include Montana, where Gavin Newsom vacations. Oh, no, don't worry, says California. He's doing that on his own personal dime. Did he not take a security detail? Did the governor of California not travel with any security? Was that security paid for personally? Was it paid for by the funds of the citizens of California? How about when he traveled to Texas? Texas is on the naughty list. It's on that discriminatory travel ban list. Texas this past weekend, because of course why, he was preparing to run for president. Did he spend any state funds on his way to begin his campaigning in Texas? I'm curious. Or is the travel ban like everything else in an elitist society in California, in Gavin Newsom's world, where rules are for the little people, you know, like going out to eat during a pandemic? You stay home, I go to the French Laundry restaurant. I mean, seriously, this has got to be everything we have to know. Pass laws, pass rules, make yourself feel better, project virtue to everybody. They abide by them. You live the good life. You eat at French Laundry, you campaign in Texas, you vacation in Montana. Hypocrite doesn't begin to describe not just the California governor, but to describe this ideology. My Fox News colleague Dan Bongino says this very well. It's not hypocrisy. It's hierarchy. It's not hypocrisy because he never intended to obey the rules. Yes, of course he thinks he's bigger and better than you. Yes, of course he doesn't abide by his own rules. He doesn't do it because he's a hypocrite. He does it because he's better than you. That's what he believes. He's higher on the totem pole. He's more important. I mean, hell, he's saving the world. What are you doing? You know, he's saving the environment. I mean, I know he's taking a private plane and, you know, burning up carbon and all that, but he's important. Don't you get it? He's higher on the totem pole. It's a hierarchy, not a hypocrisy. Even Gavin Newsom knows Democrats are headed for a shellacking in the midterms. He thinks it's because of narratives. It's because of policies. Gavin Newsom needs to look at his own state. Is he losing the narrative battle as U-Hauls begin to look like the border between Russia and Georgia, with young men fleeing to escape a military draft, with Californians moving from San Francisco and Los Angeles to Texas and Florida to escape the reign of the hierarchy of Gavin Newsom? Midterms could be ugly.
All right, we're going to step aside here for just a moment. Stay tuned.
Story number three. Why does everything look the same, sound the same, taste the same? Why is everything we enjoy the same? Let me introduce you to refinement culture. A guy named Paul Lindemann Scalise has written on this at his blog, his Substack, where he has said that refinement culture is a subtle shift in the last 20 years in many, many aspects of our life. But what exactly is refinement culture? Well, he lays out, it's a reflection that everything, including corporate logos, fonts used as you walk through your life, and the sports that we enjoy, all has been refined, perfected through analytics and data into monotony. It's all looking the same. And you know what? You have to agree. I agree with the premise, and it's kind of been existing under the surface for me subconsciously. But how did we become so monocultural? How do we become so bland? I don't like pop culture. I don't like pop anything, really. I don't like pop country music. I don't like pop music. I'll be real with you. I don't love some of the movies that do best. Maybe I'm an elitist when it comes to movies and television series. But I like distinction. I like variety. For all the talk of diversity, I actually love diversity. You know, in the first segment here of the Will Kane podcast, we talked about American culture and whether or not it's a melting pot or a salad bowl. I love the areas. I want us to understand the base of American culture is worth preserving. But I also really actually enjoy the diversity of culture attracted to the United States of America. When I lived in New York City, I didn't ever want to go to Times Square. Sbarro, in the famous words of Michael Scott, Sbarro, you know, TGI Fridays. Times Square could be anywhere. I mean, not really, because it's so full of just lights and energy. But once you're there, honestly, it could be a mall in Sherman, Texas. I like to go to Harlem and eat at Amy Ruth's. I want to walk around on a street that feels real, feels natural, feels organic, where people are living vibrant lives. I love the Boston accent. Don't ever change, Boston. Heart you. I'm a Texan. I want us to have our, yeah, jingoistic Texan culture. You know, I was sitting on the set of Fox and Friends this weekend, and Pete Hegseth and I were talking about all the different places in America. We were saying, where would you show a picture, and, you know, of your ideal morning? And he loves Tennessee. And I said, why don't you and your wife love Texas? And he said, well, you know, we like rolling green hills. And I get it. I get it. Look, Texans, here we are. We're together for a minute. It's not the most physically beautiful place in the world. Come on, we know that. I mean, look, Corpus ain't Hawaii. The hill country ain't exactly the Smoky Mountains, but they're ours, and I love it like they were. Because that's our culture. It's our thing. It's our distinction. And I'll live here, and I'd fight to the death for those hills. And I have a superiority complex over them than any place else. that any objective observer would go, why? I love diversity. When we lived in New York, I loved that my kids' soccer friends were from Ivory Coast, immigrants, legal immigrants, pursuing the American dream from Ivory Coast, from Liberia. I love to go and share their culture, eat their food, talk about their lives, hear their stories, hear their history. I love real, true diversity. Not the shallow crayon color palette of diversity that we have in America today, where everybody just looks slightly different, but thinks all the same. So how did we all get the same? All music sounds the same. According to the Lindy newsletter, it's because we have refined everything down into a monolith. And it even involves our sport, says Paul Scalise. Listen to this when it comes to sports. Have you noticed that the NBA now all looks the same? Almost nobody, first of all, goes into the paint except for a drive, a dribble drive for a layup or a dunk. Gone essentially is the big man with the back with his back to the basket. Everybody shoots the three. It's a look, it's a statistically and analytically better way to play. It is. But everybody's doing it. And the weird thing is, the game gets more boring. Everybody's roughly morphing into the same height, 6'7", 6'8". It'll grow over time. Every time you get a new big man, 7 feet, that can shoot the three, in other words, a big man that can do the same things the small man is doing, then we'll grow, we'll draft him, he'll become a star. But we'll all play the same way. Same thing in soccer. No more shots outside the box. All the shots close in to the goal. Beautiful, beautiful ball movement, supported by data and analytics. How about baseball? Absolutely all the personality, distinction, individuality sucked out of the game, a data-driven game. Home runs and strikeouts, the shift. I'm not here to tell you it's not better baseball in producing an outcome of wins, but it isn't better baseball in terms of entertainment. It's not better basketball in terms of entertainment. Look, the Warriors, amazing. Are they more entertaining than basketball in the 90s? The Knicks, the Bad Boy Pistons. Is it more entertaining? No, because it's all the same. It's not just sports, it's brand logos. Look, everybody. Scalise points out, by the way, in his Substack, that like the Quaker Oats man has become more thin. He used to have like a jowls, you know, double chin. Not now, he's lost weight. It's starting to look like the ideal version of a guy. Same everywhere. I've never heard of this guy. But it's the highliner. What is that? Is that paper towels? What is highliner? I don't know. But he looks like he could be out of a, you know, Silver-Haired Fox clothing catalog. You know, perfectly trimmed beard, swept back hair, uniformly gray with a little black highlights in there. Little Caesars logo. Shaved his chest. Chuck E. Cheese. I don't know. He just looks generic now. It's not just corporate logos. It's cars. Look at cars. They all look. You know how many times I've seen a Kia? Nothing against Kias. But you know how many times I've seen a Kia, much lower price point, on the road and thought it's a BMW, much higher price point? They look the same. Everything looks the same. Font. He points out that most corporate logos have reduced themselves to two different fonts. Everybody's operating, essentially, with two styles of writing. Everything is the same. When we were on the set of Fox News this weekend, I said something about Kris Kristofferson. I got nothing. Blank stares from Rachel and Pete. Didn't know who Kris Kristofferson was. I said, what are you talking about? Chris? Like, that's my idea. That's, you know, like, that's the coolest man to ever live. Some of you like Steve McQueen. Kris Kristofferson. That's the coolest man to ever live. Who's Kris Kristofferson? He wrote Me and Bobby McGee. By the way, blank stares, nothing. Didn't know Bobby McGee. What is going on? But you know what? That was good. Because Pete's from Minnesota, and Rachel's a military brat, Arizona. Wasn't generational. We're scattered across the age range. They grew up in places where they didn't need to know who Kris Kristofferson was, the highwayman, by the way. And that's cool. I'm totally okay with the fact that Pete thinks country is exclusively that which is produced out of Nashville. That he has no idea who Cody Jinks is. I'm cool with that. Because it's a reflection of a culture of diversity, not monotony. Not everything the same. Trust me, I think you're culturally deprived if you don't know who is Kris Kristofferson. But that's diversity. That I love. We don't need to refine everything down. I've thought about it here. We've talked about it. What is this? Like, I don't know. How about something just a little, I'm pointing behind me on the video version of the Will Cain podcast. My logo, right? I don't know. We trying to make it perfect? We're not? I don't know. How about just authentic, real? You know? Imperfect. Not refined. Gritty. Just something real. That's just me. A little diversity. A little less refinement. All right, that's going to do it for today here on the Will Cain podcast. We went everywhere. Failures and successes. Maybe even in my performance and maybe even my conversation with you. But I tend to think some of that might have been interesting. Maybe even some of that redeeming. We'll pick up on this conversation a little bit later this week as we talk about what is American culture. I hope you enjoyed. And if so, I hope you leave a comment or a rating. The Will Cain podcast. I'll see you again next time.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.